have some struggles. I think they all came from the fact that there were financial problems at the root of it.
Many times, finances are at the core of the problems that couples have when they're in breakdown. And if it's not at the core, it's at least on the sidelines.
We had relationship issues, and it helped us communicate about money, which was the hardest thing for us to communicate about. And it took that stress out. And when we removed that stress, it flowed over to our children, you know, and to our friends. That's awesome.
Our 3.5-year-old is doing commissions. Our 2-year-old, we haven't started with her yet, but the 3.5-year-old, she understands when she makes her bed or something, she gets a dime.
Recently, we paid off a bill, and this time, I took my kids in with me. And we walked in, and my husband was like, "Why are you taking the girls with you?" Because I want them to see, first of all, I want them to see people running in begging for their souls to be taken. Because that's literally what they're doing. Mm-hmm. Begging, "Please put me in bondage."
We have tried to teach the children that they need to watch money, because money can go very fast.
So I think the biggest thing is communication. We communicate a lot more. And then it makes your marriage better.
It's improved our marriage and our communication, because now we're both accountable to each other.
Our marriage has been changed because we are one about not only our money, but when you budget your money, all your priorities start lining up.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome nationally syndicated radio host and best-selling author, Dave Ramsey.
Turn to your workbooks as we get into one of my favorite lessons. This is about relating with money. You see, we've talked about this. Personal finance is 80% behavior. It's 20% head knowledge. If I could control the guy I shave with, and how many of you when I said that thought, if I could control my spouse? You know the truth. Relating with money is a big deal. Relationships and money, well, they mess with each other. Relationships that are bad mess with the money. Relationships that are good help the money. Well, and money that's going good, it helps the relationship. And when money's going bad, it hurts the relationship. But in my case, the woman does make the man. It's kind of like the old story, I think it's true, it should be, of George Bush, Sr. When he was up for re-election several years ago, they were on their last trek back across Texas, their home state, and they were in the limo, George and Barbara Bush, doing a campaign deal all across the state of Texas. Don't know if it's true, but it should be. They pulled into a gas station, and the gas station attendant saw the presidential limo with all the Secret Service people, ran out, began to pump the gas, got to pump gas in the presidential limo. Barbara turns around, sees the guy. They're in their home state. She jumps out, runs around the limo, says, "Harry!" Gives the guy a big hug. They stand back there, yak it up a little while, and George is looking at this. Barbara gets back in the limo in a few minutes, and George says, "Just who was that?" Barbara said, "Well, that's my old boyfriend in high school." And George got this big smile on his face. And he said, Now, let me get this straight. If you had married him, you would be the wife of a gas station attendant. But you married me, and you are the wife of the most powerful man on the planet, president of the largest and most powerful country, an economic force, a military force to be reckoned with. You are married to me. You married the president. She said, No, George, you don't understand. If I had married him, he would be president. So when you meet my wife, you'll know that that's the case at our house for sure. Without a doubt. All right, the flow of money in your workbook represents the value system that is operating under, that family is operating under. Jesus said your treasure is where your heart is. Where you spend your money, how you spend your money, tells me who you are. It's your autobiography. And men and women, we approach this stuff differently, don't we? Oh, you know we do. Men and women approach money differently like we approach life differently. Gary Smalley, the great writer on marriage, the great Christian writer, and a great guy too, by the way, just a fabulous man, has a great book out. And in one of the books, he defines this stuff. He says, men love to share facts. Women love to express feelings. Men connect by doing things. Women connect by talking. Dennis Rainey, who does a thing called Family Life Today, another Christian marriage and family counselor, says that the average man will speak. We are less verbal than females on average. Did y'all know that? The average man will speak about 20,000 words a day. The average lady will speak about 50,000 words a day, with gusts up to 120,000 words a day. Smalley says men tend to be controlling, women tend to remain agreeable, men tend to be independent, women tend to be interdependent. John Gray, in his great book, Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, if you've not read that, you ought to get it and read it. If you're married, it's a necessity, says men define ourselves by our ability to achieve results, where women, on the other hand, tend to define themselves by the quality of their relationships. So we are different, and we handle money different. Let me show you what I'm talking about. Men, when it comes to the emergency fund, say, you want me to put $10,000 or $15,000 aside, 3 to 6 months of expenses, and set it aside and do nothing with it, and you want it to sit there and it's not invested. I have a BBD, a bigger, better deal I can do with that money. It's boring. It's not sophisticated enough. Where women, on the other hand, say this is the most important key to our financial plan. Guys, I need all the men in the room, please, to stand up. Guys, if you are married or ever hope to be someday, listen to me very, very carefully. Women are different. You knew that, didn't you? And I'm not just talking about plumbing. I'm talking about the way they process stuff here, right? No question about it. We've been discussing that as we go along. They express feelings. We like to achieve results. Well, let me tell you, they have a little gland inside of them called the security gland. I don't know. It's just the way God wired them. It's why they say things like the emergency fund is the most important key to our financial plan. But if you have a lady in your life that you're going to be married to and you want her to be happy, you have to do some things to make the security gland relax. Because if it gets really, really tight, it starts affecting their face. It messes with them. Now, my point is this. If you will set aside $10,000 or $15,000 cash, or $7,000, whatever 3 to 6 months of expenses is in your house, just for emergencies, and you leave it alone, and you promise never to touch it, and she believes you, let me tell you guys, that's one of the best investments you'll ever make, because she relaxes in a place you don't even have. And it'll change your life because you will have changed hers. Not because she's weaker, but because on this subject, she draws security from money. And that's not bad at all. What that is just different from the way we do it. So you don't have to get it, you just gotta get it. Okay? You do the emergency fund and it will change your marriage, I promise you. Am I right, ladies? All right, have a seat, guys. Thank you, gentlemen. All right. Now, when it comes to shopping, we do things different too, right? Men, we get good deals by negotiating, right? I don't want to go shopping. I just want to go in the store, pull out my $100 bills, kill everybody in the store until I get a bargain. I want a deal. I don't want to go from store to store to store. I just want to hurt people in that store until I get a deal. So watch, right? You want to mess with them. Guys, we want to go in. It's a competition thing. It's a warrior thing, right? Ladies, they don't want to do that stuff most of the time. Now, my wife, she doesn't do confrontation stuff. I mean, I go in there and I'm start, get the $100 bills out, and I'm like, I want a bargain. I got this attitude thing going. She's going, you embarrass me. Yeah, princess, but you ain't broke anymore, you know? Ladies get good deals, on the other hand, not by negotiating typically, but by hunting and hunting and hunting and hunting. I went to this marriage conference one time, and this guy, he had some really good material, but I tell you what, he was wrong on one thing. He said, guys, if you really want to get close to your wife, go shopping with them. Right. That's a good way to cause a fight at my house, okay? I am not a shopper. I can stand up here and do this for 5 or 6 hours. My feet don't hurt. But if I go into the mall for 30 seconds, my feet hurt to my neck. What's up with that? You know, I don't understand. Y'all know what I'm talking about? And the truth is, it's kind of like this. Gary Smalley talks about this. He says, when you get out of the car and you go shopping together, the wife gets out and starts to go towards the thing. The guy goes, what are we here for? Identify the target. I'm going to map out the closest way to get through the mall to the store. Boom. We're going to go in the store, kill the thing, drag it to the register. While we're walking towards the register, we will visually analyze who is productive and which line is going the fastest so we can get in the fastest line, and we will get out of there. And the wife's looking at you going, you really don't get this shopping thing, do you? You know, what we're supposed to do is we're supposed to go in every store. We have to touch everything in every store. We have to try a lot of it on, right? And we have to discuss the checkout girl's family problems with her as we check out. We buy a whole lot of stuff, and tomorrow we will bring most of it back. Amen. We do process this shopping thing different. So Sharon and I, we figured this deal out. It does not do our marriage good for us to shop together. We have a wonderful marriage, but it's not because we shop till we drop. I'm really good at negotiating just because I kind of got an attitude thing about it. I mean, it's my money. I'm tired of them taking my money. I'm going to get as much for my money as I can get. I just love messing with them. They messed with me for years, and now that I got their game down, I just mess with them. I just go in, just sometimes I go in with into the electronics store, and I'll just walk around going, You know, I like to get a deal. You know, I like to mess with folks. I enjoy going to other countries where you negotiate. And we're going to do a whole segment on negotiating and on buying bargains. You'll enjoy it. It's one of the funniest, most fun, informative nights and afternoon sessions that we do. So we'll have a really, really good time with that. But this marriage thing, we decided we were going to just not try to go uphill on this. Sharon's really good at hunting. She hunts and hunts and Consumer Reports and the web, and she knows everything about it, and she's an expert on the whole deal. And then so what we do is we let her hunt it down, and then I go kill it. So that men and women, we process this stuff differently. When it comes to financial problems, if you're in this class and you're in financial problems, well, there's always a percentage of the folks in Financial Peace University that are struggling. Men process the financial problems differently. With men, we lose self-esteem because with us, money represents a scorecard. If you're in here and you are struggling financially and you're married, again, listen to me very carefully. Ladies, he does not feel right now in the midst of this like Sir Galahad, okay? He does not, you know, the sword is there, but it's a little rusty, okay? The armor's there, but it's got some moss on it, okay? It's not doing really good. He really doesn't feel as manly in the middle of a financial or career crisis as, well, he doesn't feel good at all about himself. So if you're in a financial crisis, ladies, you need to remember that. He doesn't need a barking chihuahua around his ankles. He might find one last use for that sword. You know? When you're facing financial problems, guys, listen carefully. That lady is afraid. Sharon said fear is not the word. She made us change it. It's terror. Because with her, that security gland gets all knotted up. Money represents security. Money represents security with ladies. So guys, what your lady needs if you're struggling right now financially is not you at home singing the hee-haw song every night. Gloom, despair. Now, I don't want you also to deceive her. I'm going to lie to the little lady. I'll just tell her everything's going to be okay. No, I'm not talking about that, okay? She's not an idiot. She's your wife, okay? Don't get into that mode. But what she does need is the truth and about 3 to 5 extra non-sexual hugs a day. She's a little scared. Some of you guys need to look up non-sexual, okay? But the truth, what she needs is just somebody to embrace her and say, honey, you know what? If it gets bad and they take some of our stuff, they're not gonna take us. Us is something that's hanging out. Because bankruptcy and divorce are best friends. This stuff will take your marriage, this financial thing. It'll mess with your marriage big time. We all know that. Some of you are looking at me going, I'm afraid to flinch because this is us, you know? Hey, I've been there. I know. It just about got Sharon and I. Not quite, but just about knocked us off. It's tough when you're struggling. So, you know, how many of you started out broke like I did? You remember driving a 1902 Pinto? You remember the deal? And starting like that? And you know, what I told Sharon was many a time, I just said, honey, if we go back there, and we did, if we go all the way back to nothing and start, we're going to do this together. That's all she needed to hear. She didn't need to hear some pie in the sky, some lie I had made up, some scheme or scam, but she did need to hear me say out loud and physically embrace her that we were going to do this thing together. And that's how we made it. So if you're struggling financially, watch this stuff. It will take your marriage. Worth Magazine did a survey that says the number one thing we fight about in our marriages is money. USA Today printed another study by the Lutheran Brotherhood, which found that, again, the number one thing we fight about is credit, spending, budgeting. Citibank, believe it or not, did a study that found that 57% of the divorces they studied were caused by money problems and money fights. Another study was done by Scripps Howard News Service that said as many as 70% of the divorces in North America are caused by money fights. Without a doubt, the number one thing we file divorce over in North America is money fights. But if it's the worst area, then that tells us that if we can get that part working right, that it can become actually the best area of our marriage. Larry Burkett, the great financial counselor, tells people that money is either the best area of communication in a marriage or the worst. But boy, it can really cause some things going on because it's got to do with power. It's got to do with priorities. It's got to do with our dreams. It's got to do with our passions. It all shows up in how we handle money. So sometimes when we're fighting about money, what we're really fighting is about other stuff that we want the money to flow towards. As a matter of fact, most of the time, that's the deal. So the cool thing is when you can come into agreement, as you learn to discuss and agree on major purchases, as you come into agreement and learn to discuss and agree on your budget, what you're doing is you're agreeing on your value system. And as you agree on your value system, you're going to see a huge change in your relationships. Because you get married, you're not one. You remember the drill? You come down the aisle, dun, 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 and then the preacher lies. He says, and now you are one. Uh-uh. You remember that first year? Those good fights that first year. Yeah, your mama's ugly too. You remember those good ones, you know? And you find out that Dennis Rainey says you come to the marriage with one of you with a set of floor plans for a ranch and another one with a set of floor plans for a tri-level. If you don't sit down and figure this thing out, you build a pretzel, right? And if that's not bad enough, if men and women being different isn't bad enough, on top of that, opposites attract, don't they? Man, I tell you what, one of you is late for everything. He said to be in there by a certain time, and I want to be there and get a good seat. And you got up at 6 a.m., you know? And you're on time for everything. Well, that's me. I'm a nerd. I am on time. I have to be on time. Sharon will be late for her funeral. I mean, the woman, we lose our religion with our three kids getting ready for church, you know? I told her the other day, I said, by the time we get there, Jesus is going to be gone, you know? I mean, it's unbelievable. She just drives me bananas, you know? And some friends of ours, Steve and Annie Chapman, he's got a great sense of humor. He does ministry to the family. Steve said this thing one night, and she used it on me once when the kids were little. She said, this Sunday, why don't we trade places? You get the kids ready, and I'll go out in the driveway and honk the horn. But, you know, one of you's late for everything, the other one's on time. One of you's in here burning up, and the other one's freezing to death. Y'all ever have those thermostat wars at the house? Rip the little plastic knob off like it had something to do with it, you know? I threatened to get one of those plastic covers, you know, with a lock on it. Leave the thing alone. The concept is it will adjust itself, you know? Moving it around. Oh, man, we've had the, you know, one of you is burning up, the other one's freezing. The opposites attract, don't they? One of you is a spender, the other one is a saver. And you need each other, don't you? I mean, you spenders, you need a saver in your life. Otherwise, you're going to retire on the dog food budget, right? You spenders, are you savers? You need a spender in your life so you have a life. Okay? Opposites attract. And you need each other. Larry Burkett says if two people just alike get married, one of you's unnecessary. You know? And so just go into it knowing this. Men and women are different, and opposites attract. So it's not going to be easy. I don't know what it's for exactly. It could have been easy. God could have just made it easy, but he didn't. He's messing with us somehow. I think he's laughing. But the truth is, if you can work on this money thing, what you do is you bring these opposite tendencies, the male-female, and you bring your other opposite tendencies, spender-saver, and some of these other things together. And as you agree on your spending, what you're really doing is you're agreeing on your priorities, you're agreeing on your fears, you're agreeing on your passions, you're agreeing on your goals. When you agree on all of those things, you reach a level of unity in your marriage that you will get no other way. You can't get unity as good as this by doing it any other way. The truth is, it works kind of like this. If you go down to the church house, right, and you're going to get married, what do they say?
The preacher says, and now we're going to tie the knot, right? You know the drill.
Problem is, what we're saying here is, in that knot gets this thing called money. And as that money gets in there, then we get something to fight about. And we get in that opposites attract, men and women differences. And you go, huh, I want to save it. I want to do this with it. I want to save for the kids' college. You know, baby, I want a bass boat, you know. Right? And you're going back and forth, and you're fighting. The cool thing is, you can have the bass boat and the kids' college fund. The way we're going to teach you to do that as we go along is with this thing called a budget. And the neat thing is, when you put a budget on this money situation, what happens is it takes all the knots out of your thing, and you have oneness. So Dave, in a marriage situation, who does the financial decision making? Both of you do the financial decision making. Now what I recommend is the partner with the natural gift prepare the budget, but the decision making is by both of you. This is a team effort because you need those strengths and weaknesses brought to the table to balance things out. My nature is I'm a spender. So it's a really good thing for Sharon because Sharon would live in a cave, collect lint, only come out on triple coupon Thursdays. She is a natural tightwad. That's not a thing I make fun of. As a wife, that's a really blessing kind of a thing to have. Some of you guys wish you had a wife like that, right? But some of you ladies don't want a husband that likes to spend. But that also means we get to go to some really nice places, and I'm a big gift giver because that comes with spending too. So the princess gets some stuff out of the deal. So it's all right, right? So you got to work through this thing, and then you get that unity together. But you make your decisions together. What happens is the nerd likes to do the budget because it gives them control and they feel like they're taking care of their loved ones. The free spirit feels controlled, not cared for, and can appear irresponsible to the nerd at times. Now, we're overstating this a little bit, but let's stay with this concept for just a second because this is important stuff. What happens is the nerd is usually the more organized person. Their underwear drawer is folded. They like doing the bills. They enjoy seeing that checkbook balance to the penny. Oh, yeah. You know? I mean, they keep up with stuff. They're the ones that naturally plan for the future. They're the ones that have everything laid out before the vacation, right? And they know the maps and the whole deal. In my house, I'm the nerd. I'm a planner. I like keeping up with the numbers. It's my nature to want to do those. It's weird sometimes to have a nerd and a spender in the same body, but it's okay. In my house, I'm real organized. I have to be on time. I'm kind of nerdish. I'm the one that, by nature, I'm the one that would sit down and do the bill. Sometimes the nerd is a lady. Sometimes the nerd is a man. It's okay. Now, the free spirit is not irresponsible, and they're not some kind of big child, but sometimes we nerds think you are. The free spirit actually is a pretty responsible person. They just don't live for flowcharts and spreadsheets, you know? They have a thing called a life. And so I'm in there going, look, honey, what our great-grandchildren will have. And she's going, would you turn the computer off and go outside? The sun is shining. You know, you nerd. She's always, you nerd, right? So the free spirit, though, they don't feel cared for. See, we nerds, we think we're caring for you. We take care of you. You need to be cared for. And you free spirits don't feel cared for. Sometimes you feel controlled and manipulated, don't you? How many of you in the room, and usually there's one in each marriage. In my house, Sharon's the free spirit and I'm the nerd. How many of you would be on my team and you would call yourself the nerd? Raise your hands. Okay, great, great. Keep them up, keep them up. I want to see all the nerds. Good, good. Where's a female nerd? There's a female nerd. Good. Are you guys married right here in the fourth, third row? Is that you guys? No, you're not together. Okay. Ah, there's one. Got him. Okay, good. Okay, cool. So I'm going to pick on you guys a little bit because some of the females are nerds. That's okay. How many of you are on Sharon's team? I hope it's the other side and you're the free spirit. You better get your hand up there, right? You're the free spirit. That's cool. Now, here's what happens. Usually the nerd at the beginning of the relationship, or lately since they've been listening to Dave Ramsey, does the budget. And they bring the budget down from the mountain. God has given them this budget. They have the sunburn, you know, the Charlton Heston thing going, right? And they present the nerd budget to the household and says, household, this is how you will live. And the free spirits all look at us and go, just till I can get to the shopping mall or Home Depot, I will fix that budget. Right? Now I want to change this process a little bit because you're going to have to learn to do a budget. We're going to talk about that in another session. But I want to teach you how to do a budget where you can do it with your relationship and make this free spirit nerd thing work. What I want to do is design a thing we call the budget committee meeting. Now, the budget committee meeting works like this. How many of you are nerds? Again, raise your hand. Let me see your hand. Okay, nerds. Now, here's the deal. I want you to prepare the budget, the first draft. That's a scary thing for nerds when I said draft, wasn't it? And I want you to bring the budget to the budget committee meeting. Now, I don't want you free spirits to do it. You're not any good at it anyway. You don't really like doing it. And we're not going to try to make you into budgeteers, okay? That's not our plan. But we do have some rules for the budget committee meeting then. Let's cover the nerd rules first. Rule number one for nerds at the budget committee meeting. Raise your hand again, nerds. This is your rule. You ready? Rule number one, when you bring the budget and set it on the table, you have had your say, shut up. Right, free spirits? They're tired of you preaching at them. They're tired of you preaching at them. They've heard all of your lines. They're sick of hearing Dave said. They don't want to hear anything else they've done wrong. Shut up. And let them look at it. Second rule for nerds. Again, nerds, raise your hand. Second rule for the budget committee meeting, nerds. This is a meeting. It is not a weekend summit. Nerds, understand this. With free spirits, you have a 17-minute window. Anything over, say, is this real life or what? Anything over 17 minutes, their mind leaves. Now, they went to the financial peace thing, so they'll stay physically. But they unplug and go to the hockey game, right? Their mind goes to something else. Something else is up. They are not into doing this stuff hour upon hour upon hour. They do not get inherent joy out of this process. You have 17 minutes. Now, that's it, nerds. That's the drill, okay? Now, free spirits, raise your hand. You have some rules for the budget committee meeting. Are you ready? The first rule is you must come to the meeting. The second rule is you actually have to talk at the meeting and give mature input, meaning I want more money for clothes. That is not mature input. If you want more money for clothes, that's great. The clothing budget might be too low. Some of these nerds, they crunch everything down. I mean, 32 cents a week might be a little low, you know? Right? So you might be. But if you're going to raise the clothing category, you've got to lower another category so the budget still balances. So the nerd has the right to look at you and go, yes, darling, if we raise that category, though, where would you suggest we take it out of? Now, nerds, that's your last rule, by the way. Last rule for nerds, you have to let them mess with your budget. Scares them to death, right? Freaks the nerd out. But if you let them mess with it, then when it's done, it becomes our plan, and we get this unity, this oneness that we were talking about. Okay, free spirits, raise your hand. One last rule, free spirits. Here's your last rule. You ready? There's a phrase at the budget committee meeting that you could never again say. If you want this communication, ladies, if you want this oneness and unity and cooperation, men, here's how you get it. You can never again, free spirits, say this phrase. This phrase will break down the whole financial piece of your household, free spirits. You can never again say, whatever you want to do, honey. Am I reading your mail or what? You can't say that. Cop out breath. You got to get in the game and play, right, nerds? At least if we're going to give up our control and our power, you got to at least come to the table and act like an adult and play. That's all we ask. And then we've got two adults working together. Children do what feels good. Adults devise a plan and follow it. And see, the big benefit is this kind of a thing. For instance, those of you that are in military, you may get like temporary duty, TDY. I mean, where they just boom, ship you out somewhere. Your spouse is left sitting there holding the bag, right? And clueless and lost. And you're in another country, and your spouse is left holding the thing. You've got to be able to do this. 75% of you ladies will outlive your husbands. You've got to be ready to handle this money. You've got to know what's going on with it and how it's being handled. This thing of being a caretaker or the caretakee thing, that's what you do with children. Working together, free spirits and nerds, working together, spenders and savers, and coming into a oneness. I'm not trying to make you spenders into savers. Not necessarily. I think you'll come along as you just mature. I'm not trying to make you savers into spenders, but I think you'll loosen up and do some more spending when you see that your goals are being accomplished. See, what'll happen is you will meet in the middle and you'll find this oneness in your marriage. It'll absolutely work. When it comes to singles, time poverty and fatigue can lead to poor money management. Beware as a single of impulse spending, which can be brought on by stress, or the pity party, I call it the I owe it to myself syndrome. Single people can get into this thing, especially the single parent. 52% of the single moms live below the poverty level. The single mom in our culture struggles. She has a hard time. The single dad struggles. He has a hard time financially because they have to do everything all by themselves. They have to do the ball team, the Cub Scouts. They have to get the tires changed. They have to get the oil changed. They got to do the dry cleaning, and they got to tutor at night, and they got to work an extra job just to try to keep the food on the table. It's tough. It is tough. And those of you that are single parents, man, I tell you what, you got a tough road, and we're on your team. We want to help you. But I can tell you this, going into pity party mode doesn't help you. Now, I'm going to get hard on you a little bit here. I mean, I know one lady that was coming through Financial Peace University. We were talking to her one night, and she had sat down. She'd done her whole budget. Everything was under control on a Thursday night. Friday morning, Friday is finally here. Just a chance maybe for a little bit of rest. We're struggling. Things are tough. I don't know how we're going to make it, but Friday's finally here. On the way to work in a thunderstorm, she blows a tire. Side of the interstate. These days, people can't stop and help you because about half the people you stop and help are crazies, right? You don't know what's going on. So nobody stops to help her. Splash, splash, splash. She changes the tire finally. Gets to work on the little tire. Drops the kids off late to daycare. Comes into work late and wet. Boss says, wah, 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 wah. She has to work late to make up for that time because she can't lose this job. It's a big deal. And of course, if you work late and you pick up your kids late from daycare, they charge you $42 a second for coming in late, don't they? You know the drill. And I guess they get tired of people being late all the time. I understand the daycare side, but I also understand the single mom side. And so she comes in, finally gets the kids out. It has been the week from bleepity bleep, right? And she is driving along and the kids are going, McDonald's, McDonald's. And she said, Dave, I got to tell you the truth. I knew there was no money in our checking account. I had just mailed it all out. I had done the budget. Everything was gone. But she said, I didn't have anything left. I didn't have any emotional or physical energy to go home and open a can. So I went through the anytime teller, hit $20 fast cash, pulled $20 out that wasn't there, and bought Happy Meals. Bounced 5 checks. Happy Meals cost her $157 when all the charges cleared. Now, this is a lady that has a take-home pay of $967 a month. You don't deserve that kind of a break today. See, when you get in the tight like that and everything's piling in on you, what you've got to do, and I know it's hard, I understand. I've been there. I know how it feels to be broke and scared. I know that feeling. But what you've got to do is you've got to turn around and look at those kids and go, shut up, peanut butter breath. We are going home. You know, we're going to spread something on us, a sandwich, something's going to, you know, and we're going to go another day. But you don't deserve to keep yourself in poverty with impulsive decisions brought on by this time stress and by life just overwhelming you. Now, sometimes singles aren't single parents. They're just young single people or older single people, and they can be just impulsive as all get out. Now, married people can be impulsive, but we always know we got to go home. Single people don't have to go home. I mean, there ain't nobody waiting on them going, where you been? What you been doing? You know, nobody, no built-in accountability. And that's not a bad thing for you singles, but it can be a thing that destroys your finances because you can eat out just to be around people. I've talked to a lot of singles who say, man, I just get lonely. I don't want to sit in the apartment anymore. You know, I just get lonely. I want to just be, even if I don't know the people, I want to be in a restaurant. I want to be around humans, you know? And they go out and eat all the time. Their budget, their eating out budget can be just horrendous. Be very, very careful. The budget, a written plan, gives the single person empowerment, self-accountability, and control. So as we teach you later to put together that written plan, single person, that written paperwork gives you some built-in accountability, and you need to develop an accountability partner, an accountability relationship, someone you can discuss major purchases with, someone you can discuss your budget with. Now listen to me carefully, singles. I am not saying get your shopping buddy to go, oh yes, get three, okay? I'm saying get your friend, get your parent who is wise with money. Get your pastor, get your boss at work, get someone to say, you know, dummy, if you can't pay cash for this car, you probably don't need this car. You know, dummy, I mean, if they don't love you enough to hurt your feelings right then over that little situation, then they're not good enough to be your accountability partner. And there's only a few of those people, you can count them on one hand in your life. Now, I'm not talking about someone who wants to control freak you and ruin your whole life, but you need to select carefully someone who you trust their judgment on money that you can run your budget past and you can run major purchases back. Hey, man, think about it. Even the Lone Ranger had Tonto. You got to have somebody to bounce this stuff off of, okay? That's the drill. Now, when it comes to kids and money, teaching children fiscal responsibility is not the school's responsibility. It's your responsibility to teach your kids how to handle money. If you have children or hope to someday, this section is for you. And I'm telling you, you've got to do it. You can't get out of high school today without knowing what an amoeba is. Now, there's a real valuable piece of information, but hardly any of your high school seniors can balance a checkbook. And we all got out into the world, didn't we? And we got beat up by all these money people and these money things because we didn't have a clue. And we got a PhD in DUMB. That's the deal. You just get the devil knocked out of you, right? I mean, where do you learn how to buy a car? From a car dealer. Oh, there's a plan. You know? I don't think so. Not that all car dealers are bad, but I mean, they really have their interest at heart, not yours, right? So the drill is teach your children how to handle money. You know, the Bible says, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he's old, he'll not depart from it. How many of you have ever heard that before? How many of you ever heard the borrower is slave to the lender before? How many of you realize that those two scriptures are right side by side? The proverb says, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he's old, he'll not depart from it. And if you just kept reading, it says the rich rule over the poor, and the borrower is slave to the lender. Teach your kids not to borrow money. Teach your kids how to handle money. Train them up. If you don't do that, someone else will teach them, and I can promise you that someone else has a game plan. Now, around our house, we don't have allowances. I don't believe in making allowance for people. If you work for me, I'm a tough boss. I'm mean, man. I'm mean. I make you make your way. You have to make me more than you cost me. That's true anywhere you work. Do you know that? You get to go home. It's called a layoff. That's how it works, right? The company has to make more than payroll, or you get to go home. That's the way it is everywhere. And around my house, it's that way. Although I can't lay you off, I can just lay into you. See, around our house, we don't have allowances. We have commissions. Work, get paid. Don't work, don't get paid. You see, we have enough folks in our culture who want to be made allowance for. I want to teach our children to be citizens, to get up, leave the cave, kill something, and drag it home. So they're on commission. I've been on commission all my life. Do you know you're on commission? You don't think you're on commission? Try not coming to work for 4 or 5 days. You'll find out you are on straight commission. They will quit paying you, won't they? That's how that deal works. I mean, you may have a little vacation time coming, but you get the point. You work, you get paid. You don't work, you don't get paid. It's a really good thing to learn early in your life. I think child abuse is letting a kid sit with an electronic game in front of the TV and eat chips all afternoon. And then he gets, or she gets obese and can't hardly function in our culture, and they have absolutely no work ethic and don't know what they're doing. Don't have a clue, don't know where they're going. I'm not some mean old daddy. I love my kids. I would take a bullet for my kids. But I'll tell you what, they will be in the yard picking the weeds out of the mulch bed too. It won't kill them. So they can understand what a little dirt under a fingernail looks like. My daughter the other day, I was riding with one of them. She said, "Daddy, why are you so hard on us about this money stuff? You just always, I know other parents don't do that stuff." And I said, "Honey, do you understand that if I die or if I live, based on the life insurance that I have, you are going to be extremely wealthy someday. And that wealth is going to be a curse to you if you don't have the character to carry it. It will ruin your life." So words are powerful. Let's teach them. And I'll tell you what, you're going to be building some wealth too. There's not any question about that, because I'm going to teach you how. And then you've got to build that character in your kids. So put them on commission. That means if you work, you eat. If you don't work, you don't eat. At our house, we have a thing on the refrigerator that looks like this. This is the commission's worksheet. Has little magnets here on the back, stick it up on the refrigerator, a little dry erase board. And all it is we made a list of, it came out of Financial Peace Junior. We made a list of our chores, and if you do your chore, you get a check and you get the money. You don't do the work, you don't get the money. It's a real neat concept. So what happens is, if I want the money, I do the work. If I don't do the work long enough, though, there are other consequences. So you have to do the work. Well, what about Dave? Shouldn't kids just be taught to work and be part of the family and just add to the family? Why do you have to pay them? Well, they probably should. The only problem I've got with that is then you lose the teachable moments that I'm going to show you. Because when they earn money with their work and have it in their hand, and daddy's not just a money machine or mommy's not just a money machine, then you can teach them how to handle money. But see, the biggest way you're going to teach them how to handle money is by example. No question about that. You got to teach by example. You see, when my little Denise, who is my oldest child, who is a young woman now, was in kindergarten way back there, this is something they had her do, actually in preschool. The brave little teacher put their little feet in paint and put it right there on the board. That's a copy of this right here. And basically it says, you can read it there, "I'm following in your footsteps." I keep this around my office all the time to remind me when I lose my temper. That means they're probably going to lose their temper. When I save and invest, they're probably going to save and invest. When I spend without thinking, they're probably going to spend without thinking. When I have a little stress, so I go buy something, they're probably going to go buy something every time they have a little stress. They're going to do what I do. They're not going to do what I say. Now, I'm going to try to teach them to do better than I did, but you've got to have a game plan. Now, we have a game plan around our house. We take it a step or two further. See, we want to show them how to live debt-free, but we also want to show them how insurance works, how IRAs work. As we buy a car, we talk about the different kinds of cars, and we look at the insurance implications of that. How many people do I know have bought a car and then found out they couldn't afford the insurance? You know? Everybody's like, no, don't make me raise my hand, you know? A lot of people do that stuff, right? I want to teach my kids that. I want to teach my daughters about what it means to change the oil in a car. My son, too, but my daughters need to know that stuff. I don't necessarily want them to become oil changers, although if they do, that'll be fine as long as they're the best one and they own the whole company, right? But the point is that they need to be confident in all these different skills of life as they go forth. Now, when kids are little, a good idea is as you're paying them those commissions, you use a clear container. And that, then it, and a good idea is to wad the money up. Take a dollar, these are all little dollar bills. Just wad up some dollar bills and stuff them in there. It looks like a lot of money, you know? And that's the idea. Little kids, but when they're like 3, 4, 5, 6 years old, they're very visual, they're very rote. And so it's a good idea to have them, let them see this grow. Wad it up so it takes up more space. So you say, "Look, honey, what happens when you work? It builds." Okay? And then every so often you pop the lid off, right? And then you get them out and you smooth them out and you go down to Toys R Them and you have a little shopping experience. And you find out that you might not have enough in here to do Celebration Barbie. We might have to downgrade to sort of had a party Barbie, you know? But you got to have something that you can afford, right? And I tell you what, don't be codependent. Oh, well, I'll chip in a few more. You've done good. I wanted to do that so bad because those little eyes were just looking at that Barbie, and it was just a character-building experience for me because I wasn't codependent and bailed her out because I wanted just a celebration. Yeah, everybody needs a celebration, you know. And right? You know what I mean? We all want, but that's a chance for them to find out about things like sales tax, you know? And it's a teachable moment. And when they earn that money and then you put a little in, what that does is it deflates that thing. Because you were building self-esteem, or I'm buying this, right? That little chest comes up, those shoulders go back, right? And if they bought it, they paid for it, top to bottom. Man, that does something inside of a kid. You're starting to raise something there of character. Don't bail them out. Oh, occasionally you'll step in. But some parents, especially in our culture where we have so much, we just want to constantly bail them out. And then it loses its meaning, doesn't it? You lose your ability. Now, I'm not a hard tail. I work with these kids. I help them. I'll do anything I can. But there's sometimes I let them fall down a little bit when I can catch them and the pain isn't too bad. Now, when they're ages 5 to 12, what I want you to do is to use three little envelopes. Now, around our house, what we did at that age was we would pay $5 for 5 chores in a week. Now, you may or may not be able to afford to do that, but we put 5 little chores on that little dry erase board. If you did all 5, you got your $5. I'm just telling you what we did. This is an example. You do whatever you can afford, but here's an idea. What we did then was we took the $5. We had payday, 5 $1 bills. $1 went into the giving envelope, okay? Because when you're at church, if you're going down the parking lot towards the church and you hand your kid money, they take it and put it in the plate in children's church. They get no benefit for that spiritually or emotionally. All they were was a courier for daddy's money, mommy's money, right? But if they earned it by working, they put it in there, they give it, it starts to change their spiritual life. They start to understand how giving works. That's very important. If somebody gives away somebody else's money, it's not hard, is it? Okay? So let them have giving. So out of the 5, we put $1 in giving. Then we had another little envelope that said spending. Now that was the favorite envelope, right? And we put 2 of the 5 in that, and we put 2 of the 5 in saving. And then have some savings goals. Have a game plan on how you're going to save and what you're going to do. And go ahead and start early. Now this is what we did from about 5 to about 12. 3 to 5, we just did $1 in the container, okay? Keep it real simple. Don't make it real complicated. And pay quick. Don't pay every 6 months. 3-year-olds don't get that, okay? 3-year-old means that you cleaned up your room, honey, which what that really means if you have a 3 or 4-year-old is mommy and daddy cleaned up the room and you picked up 3 toys. And you got all the emotional credit and the attaboys as if you had cleaned the thing spick and span, right? But you help them, you get in there, you get the thing going. And then when they've got it going, then you say, right then, you put that dollar and say, okay, we're going to put that in the jar. Now watch that jar grow because we're going to Toys R Them and this is going to be fun. You let it build up. Now when they get a little older, you break it down and now they can have some savings goals and they're waiting till Sunday to do their giving or Saturday to do their giving. They're thinking, okay, they're reaching, when are we going to, you know, how are we going to do this thing? And now they're also starting to spend with money that's theirs. Daddy, I want to go to the movie. Okay, check the spending envelope. Oh, there's nothing. No movie. Wah! You know, it just, the wailing and gnashing of teeth. It's awful. But next time, they won't spend it all. Because, the funny thing about money is, it's finite. There's only so much of it in your life. And if you're a kid that your parents gives you everything, you don't know that. You don't emotionally realize that money leaves. And then there's no more. You have to understand money has a limit. And when it's gone, it's gone. And the faster you understand that, the better. Somewhere around 13 to 15 years old, open up the child a checking account and teach them how to do it. Now, that doesn't mean open them up and let them run hog wild. But what we did with our kids as they went into the teenage years in that age, we opened them a checking account. We sit down with them, we balance it. And then we figured out what we were spending on clothing and all the other miscellaneous garbage, including entertainment and stuff, that we were supporting because we were the parents, we take care of the kids. We just figured out that's so many $100 or whatever a month. And we just wrote a check for that, put it in their account. Man, my kids started buying clothes at a different place. When it came out of their checking account, and when the checking account was empty, that was it. That was it. You were not going to the concert. You were not going. That's it. You are done. And they're like, meh, meh. And they start watching, and they get conservative, and their whole parent, I mean, they grow up is what happens, which is the idea with teenagers. We want them to grow up. so they will leave. That's the idea, right? I'm kidding, not really. Okay, now, a great savings exercise is to let the child save for buying their first car. Also in Financial Peace Junior, we have a little saving to buy with cash. You put a little picture of what you're saving for, divide it out. Now that could be a short-term goal, like a CD or a Game Boy game or something, but that could be a car thing. Now some of you parents that'll be doing really well, depending on how old your kids are at this point, but as we started to do a little better financially, we were able to do some blessing things, some incentive things. We opened a thing at our house called the 401 Dave. And that was when you're saving for a car, you will not get a car at my house. None of our teenagers got cars, just given to them. But we matched what they saved for their car. So if they saved $1,000, we put $1,000 with it. If they saved $10,000, which one of mine almost did, got a really nice car, put $10,000 with it. It's unbelievable. This kid was industrious. The other one of the people who was working with us one day, the other one asked one of our other teenagers and said, how nice a car are you gonna get? She said, well, at this point I'm on track for a really nice bike. So but they got the message, you know, it's for real. And you know what? The other ones are watching with the first few that come through. They're going to see if daddy's really going to do this or not. Not only is he really going to match, but also is he really going to not cheat and you don't get any more car than that. That's the deal. You're going to pay cash for it and I'm going to match. Now, some of you parents are not able to do that today, but if you follow what we teach you, you'll be able to do that. So teach them to set goals and save. And if you can do something like matching, well, that's a good idea. Coupled with a commitment, what if your children had a college fund and a debt-free fund? Now, one thing we did do, and some people don't agree with this, you do what you want to do. I'm giving you my ideas, okay? We paid for college, 100%. That's it. We paid for it, period. 4 years. Fifth year, you're on your own. So you best get it figured out, okay? If you major in beer drinking, it's not going to work, right? You're going to have to do this deal on your own. So the real world is we're going to pay for 4 years. Now, but what if also you taught your children the stuff I'm teaching you in these sessions about budgeting, about saving, about investing, about IRAs, about insurance, about living debt-free? What if they really had that embedded into their character and that's the way they were going to handle money for sure, and you gave them their first house paid for? Well, you shouldn't do that. You're going to... No. I said, what if they had all this stuff in their character? You see, if they really were going to live this way, do you understand that by never having any debt, ever, that would be their commitment, or I wouldn't give them a house, right? We're not going to take that house and refinance it and go to the Bahamas next week. That's not the idea. Okay, the idea is these people get it. If they get it, then you gave them a house and they didn't have a house payment, and they're going to take that old house payment that they would have had that all their friends have, and they start investing that, guess what my grandkids got? I'm old man Vanderbilt then. I'm old man Rockefeller. I broke the chains, didn't I? I broke it off of my family with knowledge and with money. If you just give kids money without knowledge, you curse them. If you just give them knowledge without money, they'll find the money. It'll come to them if they have a hard work ethic. But what if you gave them both? What if you set this thing up to completely change your entire legacy, to completely change your whole family tree? You see, I'm not just about me, 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 me. When I went broke, it was a pity party, y'all. Me, 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 me. Everything was about me, 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 me. And sometimes it still is. Sometimes I'm a selfish little boy, just like some of you are selfish little boys and selfish little girls. But what really thrills me today is when I get to see my kids, my grandkids, my great-grandkids reaching out there. I can see where this stuff is going. And I can see where it's going in your lives, too, because some of you are going to take this stuff and do it. And, man, that just thrills my heart. It changes everything. I mean, it just jazzes me. Think about it. Well, not only would your kids, I mean, they would never have to face this stuff. They would never have to face the garbage. They would never... Now, I'm not trying to make life utopia for them because it's not going to be. They're going to face some kinds of trials and tribulations. It's going to be the way it is, and they need to have the character and the stamina to walk through those things. But what if they knew how to have a budget and a plan to work out of those crises? What if they knew how to save and have the maturity, save up and pay cash for things at 22 years old, at 18 years old, where some of us don't get it at 58 years old? That's what I'm about right now, is getting this stuff into schools, getting this stuff into your preschools, into your households, and you're teaching and you're changing your kids like this. Now, I don't want you to just give them money. I mean, I'm with Warren Buffett on that. He's one of the wealthiest men in North America today. He says, it's a wonderful quote, he says, give enough money to your kids that they can do anything, but not enough that they can do nothing. We don't want to turn them into trust fund babies. That's not the idea. So the point here is this. Relating with money is a powerful idea. It works in your relationships in a marriage situation. You need to understand the ups, downs, and good things in a single situation. And you need to understand when it comes to raising your children that you can bless them or you can curse them with knowledge and with money, depending on whether you build into them this character and this structure and these ideas where they can take the money and change their lives and completely change your family tree. Thanks.
I have a 16-year-old daughter, and he gave me some great ideas on teaching her how to handle money and be prepared for the future.
I know my daughter wanted to go to lunch the other day, and she said, "Do you have money?" I said, "Oh, there's not enough money in my envelope for you, but if you got your money, you can pay for your own." And she did. I may have to support myself the rest of my life. And so I really do want to be able to make wise choices.
That's the hard thing when you are by yourself and nobody to tell you, "No, we can't do that." You can do it, and you do it, and that's a bad thing. So it's a good thing to have somebody there, accountability partner inside the group, a pastor, a friend.
This is about generations, and I remember my son saying something real powerful. He says, "Well, I'm figuring out one thing, Mom. If you work real hard for your money and then you're in debt, you don't get a chance to enjoy your money."
I make the money, and I expect her to pay all the bills.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's been maybe unfair to her somewhat. But, you know, I just didn't understand.
If I had been taught some of these things at a younger age, at their age, maybe, you know, I'd be a little better off too. So I want my kids to have more than me.
I've learned that I'm going to have better communications with my wife about money. That's going to make a difference in our relationship.
We're together about our plan, and so we're going to get rid of that debt, and that's just how we're going to do it.
I think the keys are togetherness, having a plan, and knowing what direction we're going.
We're a unified front.
We're a unified front.
Credit cards reek.